Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose Colombo right here for you at Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. And like every Wednesday, we welcome everyone from around the world, and especially those in Europe who are tuning in, even from the Russian Federation. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Sweden, Norway, so many wonderful countries. We welcome all of you to the good old USA and hope to visit your countries one day. I visited France, Europe, and Italy. Beautiful, beautiful. Preserve your nations. Preserve your architecture for future generations and for your future generations as well, because it can never, ever be replaced. It is so beautiful. Everything is awesome. The art, the masterpieces, the fountains, the churches, the cathedrals, your cobblestone roads. It is so unique and beautiful that it definitely needs to be preserved as sovereign countries. Protect your country, save your country, save your civilization, save your culture, save your race, your ethnicity, and do it because it cannot be replaced. And on that note, welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live, because today we are blessed. We are going to enter very soon into the world of authors and experts with a very, very special guest who is returning, and she is a world traveler. Her name is Patty Civilleri, and Patty Civilleri is a historian and global archaeology professional. And she served on the Director's Council of the Coxon Institute of Archaeology at the University of California in Los Angeles, California. She's on the board of the Center for Medieval and Renaissance Studies at CSULB, California State University in Long Beach. And as the 2017 and 2018 Commodore of the Alameda Bay Chargers Boating Club in Long Beach, California. She has a vast and extensive background. I'm going to tell you a little more about Patty Civilleri, author of the wonderful, beautiful two books entitled Florence, Gems, and Giants. And the second book is Venice, Keys to the City. They're not only intriguing and award-winning travel books, but they also bring an area of fun, because they also include games and quests so that you can answer questions and figure out which areas you want to visit in each city. So stay tuned, because we have the expert and the author who will be talking to us about Florence, Venice, and possibly even her journey to Egypt on Authors and Experts Corner. So don't touch that dial, because we will be back in just a moment.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
That's right. Be sure to bring your appetite to the Horseshoe Cafe in Benson, Arizona. In fact, they just made the world list and touring here in the United States of America as a landmark restaurant. Some people do think it's haunted. I've eaten there. It is fantastic. And the desserts are unmatchable. Definitely won't want to miss. In the middle of the desert, the Horseshoe Cafe in Benson, Arizona, on your way to Tombstone or Bisbee or Tucson or Phoenix. You know, I was on a radio show. I was the guest of a radio show, a very popular radio host. His name is James Lowe, fantastic host. And he can be heard on TalkShoe. He streams across the Internet, so he's heard around the world. And he allowed me to talk about the homeless children in America and the homeless women, the veterans, and a little bit about the elderly. And so before we get started in Authors and Experts Corner with our very special guest, who is a dynamite personality, her name is Patty Civilleri. And she has quite a background, which I'll tell you about in just a little bit. But I wanted to talk about the homeless while we have a few minutes here. There is a staggering 2.5 million children, American children, natural-born Americans, who are now homeless each year in America. No one is talking about this. The government isn't talking about it. And yet they know pedophilia is a major and serious problem in America and around the world. We've known for decades that there are pedophiles who are infiltrated into our government and who are engaged or complicit with pedophilia. Back in the 90s, I was invited a few times to speak at the Commission on the Status of Women in other organizations and discuss NAMBLA, which was a, which is and maybe was a, one of the very first organizations that came out boldly and set up workshops for judges and lawyers to attend these sessions on these workshops on pedophilia. And their philosophy is that it is normal to have sex with children, to engage in sexual activities with children, such as showering, bathing, dressing, and sleeping with children, and more. And so, of course, I opposed those particular agendas. This was during the Clinton administration. After Clinton was elected into the White House in 1992. So the move towards eliminating traditional marriage, the family unit, which is one male, one woman, who get married in order to procreate children, and therefore they either get married in a church or by the judge and obtain a marriage license. And of course, at the time in the 60s and 70s, the feminist now organization, along with many organizations, liberal organizations, Communist Party USA, Socialist Party USA, believed in freedom, freedom to have sex with just about anybody you please. And it was okay to leave the family home and put your kids in a child care center. But back then, there weren't very many child care centers, so it turned out that many children ended up as latchkey kids. And the issue of divorce increased when they also introduced no-fault divorce. And it increased to the point where some years it's between 40% to 70% of American families end up in homes and in divorce court. So this involves the children as well. This creates children who grow up angry and confused and strike out. Because the family unit is the foundation of a civilized nation. And the communists and the socialists know this fact. They also know that morality is important to a civilized nation, and that the breakdown of morality will also create a uncivilized nation. So all of these factors and many more are intertwined and have created a nation that is now suffering from homelessness, which many, many people are unaware of or ignore or perhaps are not concerned about. But I want to tell you that it is an extremely important issue because 2.5 million children in America who are natural-born Americans go to bed hungry and homeless every night. Some sleep in their cars. And in the state of California, they just passed a law that you cannot sleep in your cars or your vans. So I don't know why they did that, but they did that, as many people use their vans and their mobile facilities to sleep and eat. And then, of course, we have 40% of all the homelessness today are women. So I want you to keep that in mind because there are not enough shelters, there are not enough churches, there are not enough facilities and taxpayer-funded facilities for these women and children to be housed and sheltered and protected and safe so that they can get back on their feet again. So we're going to talk about that in a future radio show. So just start Googling, start researching, and seeing how you can help these homeless women and children in your communities, because homelessness can happen in a split second, as we saw from the fires in California and tornadoes and other natural disasters around the country, or from divorce or loss of job or business. So let's think about these issues and let's try to figure out how in each community we can help our homeless American women and children, veterans, and the elderly. So on that note, we will leave our political world and we will enter into the world of authors and experts. And boy, do we have a wonderful author and expert today. Her name is Patty Civilleri. She's a writer, she's a photographer, she's a graphic designer and technology professional. Patty has the pleasure of building websites, photography, marketing, and writing for over 200 commercial business clients around the country. She is an avid cook, sailor, singer, and classical pianist residing in Long Beach, California. Lucky California for having a wonderful, dynamic person such as Patty Civilleri living in the state of California. So we're going to talk about Patty's books, and we're going to talk about her travels just as soon as we come back from this very important message. So stay tuned. Don't touch that dial. We will enter into the world of authors and experts in just one moment.
Keeping up with the news these days is like keeping up with the car. Well, you get the idea. There's a lot of yelling and screaming. Intelligent discussion, not so much. Ready for something refreshing, thought-provoking, and friendly? Okay, grab your favorite hot or cold drink, sit down, and listen to a friendly voice. The Columbo Chronicles Live with Rose Columbo on Blog Talk Radio. Every Wednesday night at 8 on the West Coast, or 11 for anyone sleepless on the East Coast, Rose Columbo welcomes dynamic authors and experts on a myriad of human interest topics. From politics to love, the environment, the mafia, healthcare, and more. It's 60 minutes of original entertainment and intriguing information with the top VIP guests. Senator John DeCamp exposing the Franklin cover-up. Dr. Tony O'Donnell, the herb doc. Dr. Alan Keyes discussing the White House. So, from Rose Columbo's home on the Columbo Chronicles Live to your home, Columbo says she doesn't want to have to send the familia to make sure you are listening.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Yes, listen up, because now we're entering into the world of authors and experts. We're going to do some traveling, and we're going to travel into the world of Europe. And in particular, we're going to visit with Patty Civilleri, the award-winning author of her travel books, Florence, Gems, and Giants, as well as her latest book, Venice, Keys to the City. And both books have a matching city fun book that uses games and questions as a fun way to visit a city, so you can choose exactly the places that you want to see in each particular city. So let's say hello to Patty and welcome her to Columbo Chronicles Live. Hi, Patty. How are you today?
Hi, Rose. How are you? It's wonderful to speak with you.
Yes, it's wonderful to have you back. I know you like to travel, and it's part of your work as well, because as a historian and global archaeology professional, you must enjoy your travels as well as the honors that that come with it, because I know you've served on several of the councils. And why don't you, in the various universities, why don't you tell us a little bit about that background? And again, why don't you tell us a little bit about Florence, Gems, and Giants, and why you came to write about Italy?
Well, thank you for asking. Well, for 17 years, I served on the Director's Council of the Institute of Archaeology at UCLA. And with them, I have had the fortunate honor of traveling to the deep, dark corners of our world with scientists and archaeologists in search of lost and ancient cultures. And it really has been sort of the, you know, Indiana Jones in high heels kind of a life. And for the Institute, I've photographed for them, I've written for them over the years. But each time I traveled and landed in a city, I would always look for a book, a certain kind of book. You know, it's kind of the way the book should have been, according to me. But I was always looking for a book that was very visual. I wanted one that gave me deep background on the place where I was going to spend some time. But I didn't want to read a textbook. The guidebooks were telling me all the places to eat and drink, and I didn't need that. I really wanted to understand where I was in the history of the place. But I wanted it deep, and I wanted it visual. I wanted it to be fun, and I wanted stories. And nowhere and anywhere in the world that I had been had I ever found a book like this. So a couple of years ago, I was on a photo shoot, probably the toughest job I'd ever had, but it was a month-long photo shoot shooting ancient a newly discovered ancient Mayan cave in Belize. And that was a tough job. And I came home from that just reeling. Something about that job messed in my head, and I couldn't find my own feet. And I thought, you know, I want to go somewhere with my camera and just chill for a couple of months. And so I thought, well, I'm going to go to my favorite city in the world, which was Florence, Italy. And I went to Florence, and I looked out the window on my first day there, And I thought, wow, why does this city look like this? What on earth happened here? So I went out and I bought the guidebooks and I took tours and did all that. And I ended up with way more questions than answers. They were sort of glossing over the surface, but nobody was really getting into the city with any depth at all. And so when I got home from Florence, I thought, well, I'm going to make one of those coffee table books, you know, sort of like a Shutterfly book where you assemble all your photos online and they send you a beautiful book. Well, as I was writing the caption for the photos, the captions kept getting longer and longer and longer and longer. And this little coffee table book actually turned into a book, which is Florence Gems and Giants. And it turned into that book I had been looking for in all the cities that I had traveled.
That's
I think
fantastic.
That's a very odd way for a book to start.
Well, it makes me chuckle because that happened to me. I haven't published it yet, but I thought the same thing, and then it kept getting longer and longer. And the more I got into it, the more interesting it got, and the more things I found. And I was like, oh, well, people have to know about this and this and this. And now it's turned into a book.
That is exactly how this happened.
I can totally relate. It's such a fun thing though, because it's exciting, isn't it, that you're like learning new things as you're going along as well.
Yes, yes. And, you know, I wanted it to be, you know, not in a corporate style. I wanted it to be in sort of me telling you bedtime stories kind of a style, you know, a very personal style. And the book has gone on to win just a whole bunch of awards, including, you know, the best international travel book. It won best overall nonfiction book, won book of the year. Who knew?
Well, see, that's what, you know, my daughter's a photographer, and I definitely want you to meet her. Yes, and so I tell her, I go, you know, don't worry about what people think. You have a market. Some people are going to love it. Some people aren't. will be neutral. Some people will not like it at all. It doesn't matter.
Right.
You always have a market. And so this is really exciting to me and encouraging, too. And, you know, there are plenty and plenty of guidebooks about Florence. So what do you think makes your book stand out over the rest to win these awards? Everybody wants to win, right?
Yeah, and that's a good question. Probably, you know, sort of a combination of things, I guess. First of all, I didn't take up any space in the book, you know, the weight in the book with things like restaurants and bars and hotels, because you can get all that stuff online. And I also am sort of personal believer that if you're in a place like Italy and you're walking down the street, you don't need anything, a book or online, to tell you how to find a good restaurant. The whole point of being in Italy is to walk down the street and discover. And you will. You will discover amazing places, and I promise they're all brag-worthy. You know, they're amazing cooks in Italy. So I didn't take any of the pages with that. So I went really right for the heart of the city. So really my task now when I write a book is to go into the city with no preconceived notion, to go in and just go crazy, go anywhere, just with no pre-agenda, and see everything, see as much as I can, visit, learn, and let the city tell me its story. And that's basically what I want to do, is I want to tell the story of these cities, the real heart of who they are, where they've been, tell their secrets, their fun stories, a little gossip in the book, you know, about some of the interesting people in history that have, you know, pulled some interesting shenanigans. But the idea is that when you walk down the street with this kind of stuff in your head, it brings so much more meaning to what you're looking at. And
well,
so
Patty,
I wanted to pass on that kind of depth.
Yes, and Patty, I wanted to tell you that my two daughters and myself and my granddaughter visited Cannes and Spain and Italy.
Oh.
And we did go to Florence. And my daughters have been to Venice, but I hadn't, and I still haven't gone there yet. But yeah, but
oh, we got to fix that.
And I have to tell you, because my grandfathers were born in Sicily, and my grandmother was born in Napoli. We did see Napoli, and it you know, touched my heart, of course, you know, because I was very close to my grandparents. But I want to tell you that I loaned the book you sent me to my granddaughter before the trip, because she's in college and she's very, very articulate about planning everything out. And she used your book to help us out and on places to visit. And it was a great, great source. And I want to tell you that just walking into Spain, and we're traveling to Spain and Italy, I felt like I was in heaven. I mean, I felt like this is something every person must see, every man, woman, and child, because it's all the way back to ancient times where they had no modern. I mean, I was so amazed with the architecture and the art, and I'm still can't even comprehend it because it was so beautiful that when I look at the pictures, I'm just like, oh my gosh. But they did all this without modern day tools.
Yes.
And that to me was amazing. And these buildings still stand.
Yes, they do. Isn't that interesting? Gee whiz, what do they know that we don't know?
Yes, and like you said, the restaurants, what I noticed too, Patty, was that the restaurants were just like when my grandparents were alive and we'd go to their home. Everybody had to eat. Nobody was on cell phones. Nobody was looking. Everybody was talking. And it's the same way there. They aren't even in a hurry to get you out of the restaurant. It's like a family participation where and social participation at the mills. Did you find that true?
Oh, so absolutely true everywhere. And that's why I said you don't really need a guidebook to tell you where to go eat. It's so wonderful to visit these places, and it is like walking into your grandmother's kitchen in a lot of these old countries. And for Americans, it's so easy to visit a lot of these countries because as we grew up with Western, European Western history. So there's so much familiarity. There's little dots in our heads that we picked up when we were growing up in our history classes and geography classes and such, but we never really thought much of them. And when you travel, it connects a lot of things that were sitting in your head for your whole life. And the sights and the sounds and the smells are magical. I am a total travel addict. I cannot get over it. It's fantastic.
Oh.
I'm so happy to hear you did that.
Oh, and I mean, it is, because you're like, I need to go back. I need to go see this. I need to go see that. I need to, you know, it's like a must-do list now, you know. And
yes.
It's so exciting to, you know, you hear about these things, looking at pictures, looking at, you know, videos, is not the same as being present. Do you believe
right.
that?
Oh, my gosh, absolutely true. And I think a lot of it is bringing in all of your other senses. And it's really marvelous when you can, you know, when you can smell and hear, you know, the steeple bells ringing, and you're, you know, you can smell, you know, something cooking in garlic, and you're looking at buildings around you that were built in, you know, stone from 1,000 years ago, and you can imagine you're seeing the same thing that they saw when they walked down the street, and you're smelling and hearing and feeling everything that people saw 1,000 years ago. I mean, it's in this country, we don't have a history, so this is just something we don't know here. And it's so enlightening. I'm sorry?
Oh, it is. Oh, I said, because we're a new country, basically, compared to Europe and Asia and all the rest of the countries, Egypt.
Exactly.
Oh, speaking of Egypt, not to get off the subject of Europe and your books in Italy, but the last time I talked to you, didn't you say you were on your way to jet off to Egypt?
Yes, I did. And wow, what a magnificent, you know, I've been to Egypt 4 times. And it is such a magnificent country, and I will probably go back again next year because I can't seem to get enough of Egypt. Being a history and an archaeology nut, no country in the world has cooler archaeology than Egypt, and they keep digging up more, and I keep having to go back to see all these new wonderful things they find. It's fantastic.
Wow. That is amazing. And so going back to your books, which are Florence, Gems, and Giants, and they're award-winning books, in fact, Venice, Keys to the City, what do you think is the difference between, if you had a choice, visiting Florence and visiting Venice? Because I didn't have a choice on this trip.
Oh, you're not going to believe the first thing that came to my mind when you asked me that. Oh, it's so interesting. You know, Florence and Venice are different simply because, I mean, one of the most obvious basic things that you notice if you go to both cities, you know, in a close period of time, is that Venice is, first of all, an island. And it is, there are no cars in Venice. So every street is a walk street. And there are, you know, hundreds of canals in Venice. And there's 408 bridges, so everything you do is on foot. There's no wheeled vehicles, there's no wheeled, the only wheels that you will see in Venice are the ones, you know, from people's suitcases clacking down the streets. And because every 30 or 40 feet, there's another bridge, a step bridge to go over. And so there can't be really any wheeled vehicles. Or any wheeled, you know, no roller skates, no bicycles, no scooters. Very un-Italian to not have scooters. But so what it's done is it's kept Venice a very old world city, where Florence is kind of, there's a lot of things mixed into Florence, like you'll see like big designer shops right in the middle of, you know, ancient things, where Venice really is the way it was 1,000 years ago. Venice really is an old-looking city everywhere you go, and they've kept it that way, and they've preserved that. And that's something that really isn't, you know, nobody really makes a point of that. And I think that's a fantastic point. I spent, 3 months in Venice last year before writing my book, and thanks to the Italian Tourism Bureau, they've been really excellent about helping me get into places I normally wouldn't be able to get into and meet people and attend functions that I would never have been able to do before. And they showed me a side of Venice that is so different than any that I had ever even heard about when I looked at all the, you know, preparing for the trip, looking at all the travel websites and so forth. Again, they all talked about where to eat and where to drink and where to sleep. And nobody really talked about the fact that this is a cool old city. Florence, on the other hand, again, something that they don't dive really deep into, although there's a lot of modern things mixed in with the city, Florence has probably one of the neatest, coolest stories to tell, and that is the story of the Renaissance. The whole Renaissance movement was born in Florence, and it was a movement that took 1,000 years of living in the Dark Ages and pulled people out of the Dark Ages and into modern thinking and thinking for themselves, and that process was called the Renaissance. All of that was born in Florence, and that changed all of Western history that had been the same for 1,000 years. Dark. So, you know, Florence and Venice are incredible to me. I think they're amazing cities. I think they're not being sold the right way. They're being sold based on, you know, their tourist trap restaurants. And I think that really does the cities an injustice. And they are fantastic to visit. Just marvelous to see. Did you find that in your trips?
Oh, gosh, it was wonderful. I mean, I'm still on cloud nine thinking about it. And we hired the local drivers to drive us around, and we told them that we did not want to go to any tourist areas. We didn't want to go to any tourist restaurants. We want to eat where the locals eat. We want to talk to
good for you.
Oh, yeah, and I mean, they were so good to us. Of course, I use the Colombo name a lot, so that helped.
Yeah, I use the Chivalry name a lot, too.
I don't know, you know? Uh-oh. we got really good service. And
wow,
that's
fantastic.
Oh, yes. And I mean, they were just wonderful to us. And everything was just fabulous. We were on cloud nine, actually. And then we went to, even in Spain, beautiful, beautiful architecture, beautiful and so clean. I couldn't believe how clean it was. It was like unbelievably clean. Probably the most clean cities I've ever seen in my life.
It's very Canadian of them to be that clean. Canada's like that, too.
You don't see a speck of anything on the ground, nothing. And, and the food is presented so beautifully. I mean, it was beautiful, too. And then we went to Cannes, and we hit the film festival there. And
neat.
Yeah, that was really cool. So all the producers and actors and everybody was there from all over the world. So it was really, really busy. And so that was exciting, especially since my granddaughter was with us. And but Italy is somewhere I could actually live in Italy without a problem.
Oh, especially if you're a Californian. There's something about Italy that really that resonates well with Californians. I don't know why. Probably because we have a very similar climate, which is why we grow a lot of the same, like our wild scrub oaks are the same. We grow the same grapes. We drink the same wine. We all love our wine.
Well, it's really interesting because, here in America, though, you know, everybody's in a hurry to eat, you know, or they go to fast food places or they don't have dinners anymore. When they're out to dinner, the restaurant owners are, you know, a little pushy to get people out if they're crowded off the tables, bring in the next one. But I was just fascinated with the fact that in Italy and Spain, it's not like that at all. Stay as long as you want.
Well, you know, what you're saying is absolutely true. They have a completely different restaurant business model than we have here in the States. And, like, we will try to have as many, our goal is to turn those tables as many times as we can during an evening, right? Their goal is not. Their goal is to serve one meal per table. And so, but they want that meal to be an experience. They want it to be something that you'll remember, which is why I think people remember their restaurants so well, because I think that experience, you know, really is important to them, and I think they recognize that. But yeah, they're in no hurry to, you know, to kick you out after a meal. You can hang out there till midnight and just, you know, buy nothing else and drink nothing else. Just hang out and socialize. They're as happy as can be.
It's a wonderful experience, and they eat late too.
Yeah,
they eat early.
That's tough.
I have to tell you, when we were in Cannes, it was hot, and we were thirsty while we were walking through the beautiful areas downtown, and the restaurants were closed, and we were so thirsty, you couldn't get anyone to sell you a cold drink because the restaurants closed down. They take their nap, I guess. So we finally found a little mall, and they had one of those little snack bars in it where you could get a cold drink. But we were so happy to see them.
Oh, you're right. You're right. Here you can find food 24 hours a day easily everywhere you go. But you're right. In Europe, you cannot. They don't open restaurants until, nothing's open at all until 7 o'clock at night, 8 o'clock at night.
It was amazing. Yeah, it was amazing to us, and everything was so exciting. So tell me then, in your books, Florence, Gems, and Giants, and Venice, Keys to the City, do you have any interesting characters that stand out in your mind?
Yes, quite a few, especially Florence. Florence has some amazing, amazing people. Obviously, Michelangelo is at the top of that list, and there's a lot of stories in the book about some of the little stunts that he pulled in his life because he was a very unusual sort of a fellow. And there was, you know, a lot of artists that we might already know of, you know, Botticelli and Donatello, Raphael. You know, Raphael died real early, which is kind of sad. But, you know, the names go on. Galileo is from Florence, and Dante is from Florence. Leonardo da Vinci spent a lot of time in Florence. Golly, there's it just goes on and on. The Bonfire of the Vanities, that story that was a movie with Tom Hanks a few years back. That term, the Bonfire of the Vanities, actually came from Florence, and it was a monk by the name of Savonarola who basically convinced everybody that if they didn't burn all their worldly goods in a giant bonfire in the middle of Florence, that they would not be able to go to heaven. And it was
great.
He actually became known as the Mad Monk ultimately. But you know, there was a pirate
California.
Huh?
Maybe that's what's happening in California.
Yeah, really. I think you're right. You're right.
Oh,
you're right. There was the Medici family, who was the moneyed family, and how much power and influence that they had in the city, and how through their influence they took a guy who was a pirate and backed him. They literally invested in him and backed him and through the papacy, and ultimately he became a pope. So there's a story in the book called The Pirate Pope. So there's, you know, there's a lot of stories. There's stories about how the Statue of David, what was in Michelangelo's mind when he created the Statue of David, and what was the problem he had when he, you know, took a look at the piece of stone he was given to carve that David. And, you know, there's Leonardo da Vinci and all the things that he and Michelangelo, see, all these guys knew each other. All these familiar names that I'm naming, they all knew each other. This, mm-hmm. These guys were the guys that created the Renaissance. And, you know, Da Vinci and Michelangelo just absolutely detested each other. And, you know, and Michelangelo hated Leonardo da Vinci for so many years. And then when this young fellow named Raphael came into town, Michelangelo found room in his heart to hate him too. I mean, there was so much competition in the world of art and being the guy that had the most important statement to make through your art, that their relationships with each other were just incredible. They're just absolutely hysterically funny. So I wrote Florence from that perspective, and really understanding that 200-year period of history that makes the Florence that you see today, it makes it what it is. And, oh, yeah, lots of really interesting people in Florence.
So, I mean, there's so many things to see, and they're all spectacular, and you don't get to see them all, of course, because of time, and if you're in a time when there's tourists, you have to stand in line, and it takes longer, and or if you're on a schedule, whatever. So what would you say to people who want to visit, let's say, Venice? We went to Sorrento, Rome, Naples, and Florence. So we could not see any more than that, but we didn't see everything because you can't. And so what would you say to people who are planning their dream vacation, let's say to go to Italy, and how much time do you think they really need to spend in, let's say, Venice or Florence or Sorrento or another city that they want to relax in and enjoy and visit?
You know, that's a hard question, because to me it really depends on what is interesting to you. I put something in the Venice book. I got this idea of, hey, instead of doing what everybody else tells you to do, it's your vacation. Don't do it. You know, don't spend it doing what everybody thinks you should do. I put a page in the book that says, hey, you know, if you're interested in museums, here's a list of all the museums. If you want churches, here's the churches. If you like bridges, here's the bridges. If you like music and theater, you know, here's all the places where you can enjoy, you know, live performances. If you just like architecture, here's where to go. If you want to know about the people. In other words, if you're going to go on a vacation, you should find, you know, you should figure out what it is that you like to see or what you'd like to see, and see that city from that perspective. You're going to see a lot of other things on the way, but if you start with a brand new city, let's say your thing is architecture, I would say, you know, give yourself, and I don't know if you're interested in architecture, I don't know how long, you know, if it's 3 days or 10 days, but if it's architecture and you're going to a city with a lot of it, or if it's art or whatever, figure out what you want to see, what's important in that city that looks interesting and attractive to you, or like something that you might want to learn or see for yourself or take a photograph of. And that's where you want to start your search, rather than just jumping in with the crowd and saying, okay, the world says I've got to go to this museum or that museum. Boy, because a lot of people walk away and they're very disappointed, saying, I got dragged to 10 museums and I'm not even a museum person. Do what you like to do and see a city that way. Travel according to your own interests. And you'll see other things along the way. And you'll also find places to eat and drink that are absolutely spectacular. And I think that's a more sensible way to travel, rather than just blindly jumping in with everybody. Because that's where the long lines come in and the high prices, and, you know, it's kind of sort of, it makes a lot of these places very cliche instead of turning them into something that's a personal experience for you. And, you know, you spend so much money traveling. It's expensive. And you have little time to do it. You know, Americans only get 2 weeks off. Europeans get a lot of time off, you know.
Yeah, even so, the day.
Yeah. And so, you know, if you're going to spend all that, you know, precious time and all that money to go someplace, don't go with blinders on. You know, go in looking for something that's already interesting to you and make it your trip. And that's probably the best advice I can do. How much time? Gee whiz, I wouldn't know. You know, I would balance out how much time you have altogether and try not to breeze through a city. You know, have a drink in a restaurant in a city and check that off your list, and then say, gee, I've been there. I won't go back there. That hardly does justice for any place that you've gone. So I'd say, you know, if you've got a couple of weeks, I'd say, you know, go to, you know, 2 to 4 places and spend a couple of days in each and just dig according to your interests. But that's my 2 cents worth.
No, that's true, because that's pretty much what we did. And then we grabbed the drivers, and, you know, Felipe was one of our best. And,
hey, did you notice that nobody in Italy has American
so
names?
That was my grandfather's name and my brother's name. But in English,
wow.
It's Philip. Yeah, it's Philip. So, of course, we bonded right away. Felipe.
Oh, my son is Giuseppe.
Oh. And the thing is that he was telling us that the most important thing to them is family and, you know,
yes.
and eating together and, you know, and sharing that time, where in America it's the opposite. You know, they use
right.
their money to go, 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 and there they work to provide for the family so they can be together, you know, at meals and doing things together and enjoying family time. And I thought that was really important, that they're still back in the days when America used to be like that, but we've forgotten because we're not like that anymore
right.
for most families. And so I found all of these things so intriguing and interesting, and also the fact that I think you might mention it in your book, that you have to do a lot of walking and there's a lot of steps to climb. So people should be prepared for that.
Yes, and wear good shoes because their streets are 1,000 years old, so they've got some potholes like we've never seen here. They have crooked curbs and holes and stepping stones in the middle of very busy walkways where we tend to, you know, everything is very smooth. And I remember this one poor American tourist tripped and fell right in the middle of a sidewalk, and European person looked at them and says, "Oh, stupid American, they're always looking up. They never look where they're going." And I thought to myself, that's because we don't have to. Our streets are smooth.
Okay.
I didn't say it out loud, though.
No, and you know, it's really funny, though, because, you know, the people we talked to, they all said they loved America. You know, unlike we heard, you know, we hear on the news, the people, the regular people, and the waiters and waitresses, they were so excited we were from America. They all told us they wanted to come to America. They wish they could live here. They like President Trump. So it's so opposite when you're talking to them from what we're reading in the news.
And that's that way all over the world. Even in Egypt, when I go to the Middle East, when I go to China, people love us. They love Americans. We don't have to hide under a baseball cap. Everybody wants to be seen with you. They all want their pictures taken with you all over the world. And I'm just absolutely astonished when I hear and read and talk to people that we're supposed to be afraid to be Americans and be embarrassed about being Americans. And we're really told that being American is not a good thing. And yet when you travel, the whole world reminds you how lucky we are to be Americans. And I just think that's one of the things I love about traveling.
It was the total opposite of everything I'd heard, and I was very pleased and very happy that they just loved Americans and America, and they just treated us so well and told us, you know, their feelings about how they would love to live in America. They'd love to come and visit America. And it was really, really enlightening and empowering and a feel-good moment, you know, that people don't hate America.
But it's hard to convince an American, because how do you convince an American of that?
Unless they go there and they, you know, but if you're a good, you know, if you treat them well, they're going to treat you well too. You know, you can't go and be grumpy and complain about everything because they don't have a lot of elevators. They have a lot of stairs and they have a lot of cobblestone. But that's what's so beautiful, because they preserved it that way. And that's how people in those days of the past didn't have any of those conveniences that we have in America. So what do you think about are you going to write again about another city in Italy, or do you think you're going to write about another country?
Ooh, everybody asks me that. I'm going to probably go for the trifecta, and I'm going to take on the big Rome, and that's going to be a big one. And you know, Florence had 200 years of a very defined history. Rome has 2,500 years of big history. So I have to figure out how to, and Rome is very confusing when you look at it, and they spout all these names and of places and people that were there. It's so muddled up in your mind, you don't even realize that the people they're talking about lived 1,000 years apart from each other, or 2,000 years apart from each other. And you don't know did Caesar live at the same time as Caligula lived? I mean, they lived in the same Rome, but, you know, you didn't know they were 500 years apart. So what I want to do is I'm going to dissect Rome completely differently. Yeah, I want to take it apart differently and make it so that it is simple enough for a student to understand it, let alone an adult. You know, make it easy so you can actually digest what you're seeing in that overly complex, deep, deep piece of history in that city. But that's going to be probably the biggest project I've ever had.
Yeah, because Rome also, you know, involved Jesus Christ and you know, as well. I mean, those days as well. So, and then the Vatican and I mean,
the Vatican's going to probably have to be its own book because, you know, the papacy had such a reach and such stories. It's just fantastic.
I mean, when we walked into the Vatican, I was breathless. I mean, it was, I mean, you look at these masterpieces and tears come to your eyes because you're just like, it's so beautiful. Even your brain can't comprehend the beauty and the art and the work, the tedious work of love that went into these art masterpieces. And to have them preserved is so important, at least to me, that, you know, I think, you know, that, you know, and pray that they are preserved for future generations to see.
You know, I picture a day in Rome, in Roman history, where a guy named Niccolo Machiavelli, who is the famous Machiavelli, was trying to negotiate peace with the Pope. And in another room, there was Raphael painting his beautiful School of Athens in that room. And in yet another room, there was Michelangelo on his back painting the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. I mean, what a day that would have been, right?
Yeah, I mean, seriously. And at that time, I doubt that they really thought much about it, you know. I mean, about these guys being such geniuses.
Yeah, actually, they did. They hired these guys because they were the most expensive guys in the world. Michelangelo was the highest paid artist in the history of Western Europe. And so he was the superstar, and, you know, Raphael was a real upcomer, and Raphael was the one who originally got the job of painting that ceiling, and he didn't want it. Nobody wanted that job. That looked too hard. So he convinced the Pope, who was his buddy, or the Cardinal, to get Michelangelo to paint that ceiling. He says Michelangelo didn't even like to paint. He never even thought of himself as a painter. He loved being a sculptor. So it's, you know, I just love thinking, you know, understanding what was happening in these people's heads behind what you go and you see today and you look at. It's wonderful. But I love the backstories, you know, and the personality.
Yeah. That's what I meant, though. I meant, like, they probably didn't think that they were such great geniuses, that they were art going to be masterpieces for the world to enjoy and, you know, and be in awe of, you know, for how many centuries?
It's been 600 years now.
Yeah. So, I mean, that, you know, I'm sure they never dreamed that today, in these modern times, people were still going to be standing in long lines just to see their beautiful masterpieces. I mean, believable.
Isn't that incredible? They are so amazing.
Incredible. And so, are you going to be traveling again then soon?
Yes, I am planning to go to Easter Island in a couple of months to go with the Institute of at UCLA, with the Archaeological Institute, to Easter Island, and then to Costa Rica from there. Doing some stuff in the jungle down there, and then I'm going to come back and start, you know, prepping for my Rome trip. And, you know, again, I'm working with the Italian Tourism Board, and everybody has been so gracious and inviting and wonderful about helping me get into these, you know, get into places and experience these cities. I just couldn't be more fortunate.
You have a wonderful, wonderful life and exciting life. And you're sharing it with the world, and that's really important, and we really appreciate it, and sharing it on Colombo Chronicles Live. And so now's your time to shine, so you can tell our audience how they can get your books or any websites and social media you have.
Oh, well, thank you so much. Wow, that's really kind of you. Well, essentially, you can find my books on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, pretty much in most stores. They're getting, actually, as we speak, they're getting put in all the international terminals at airports all over the United States and Canada and England. So that'll be really great. So they're going to get easier and easier to find, and which is terrific. The books have done really super well. And I would love to see you on Facebook. Stop in and say hi. I am at P. Civilleri on Facebook, at P. Civilleri on Twitter. And my website is italytravelbooks.com. And I just couldn't be pleased. And I would love for anybody to drop in and let me know that they heard this interview on the Rose Colombo Show and drop me a note and tell me hi. I'd love to hear it.
Fantastic, Patty, and hopefully I'll be seeing you at the next Southern California Book Club meeting.
Yes, I heard you were going to be there.
Maybe we can talk. I don't know the distance, but we can talk in between. And
you betcha,
carpool. So. Anyway, Patty, it was a joy, and as always, and informative, empowering, and enlightening. And now you got me all fired up wanting to go back.
Oh, I hope somebody goes as a result of this. I hope I didn't scare anybody away.
Oh, no. I think that not. I think it's all on the contrary, making people want to save and go and see while they still can all the beautiful, beautiful architecture masterpieces and enjoy the wonderful food, as you said. And thank you so much for joining us today, and God bless you and be safe in your travels.
Thank you so much, Rose. It was such a delight to speak with you again, and I look forward to meeting you in the future.
Me too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And Patty Civilleri with her wonderful books, Florence Gems and Giants and Venice, Keys to the City. You can find them on Amazon.com. Check out her Facebook. Say hello. Tell her you listen to the show. And join us again next Wednesday from 12 to 1 p.m. live right here on Colombo Chronicles. Remember, all shows are archived, so if you missed a show, you can always come back to blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles and scroll on down. And remember, God bless you, God bless America, and happy, and visit Italy and the rest of the world if you possibly can. Well, you still can.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.
Listening is an art that humans are losing to the world of robots. Robots don't have any tone or human feelings. The addiction to communicate by texting isn't going away. People are feeling isolated, lonely, frustrated. People need people willing to listen to them. Can you imagine getting a text message that read, "You're fired," or "Hi, would you marry me?" It is happening. Colombo Chronicles is the option and the answer to human communication. Colombo Chronicles provides email access to your ideas and issues. Take advantage of this opportunity now. Go to ColomboChronicles.com. Click on subscribe today. Colombo is spelled C-O-L-O-M-B-O Chronicles. Fill out the form, submit it, bookmark and subscribe today. Remember the name, ColomboChronicles.com.